Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm John Hawkins. This is Giving Unusual Gifts to Ministry. And we're going to go ahead and get started. I want to do something. I want to do something, which I don't like to do when I speak, but I'm going to have to do this because, as you know, we don't have much time here. And many of us have to be at some other events at 4 o'clock sharp. So I'm going to ask you to hold your questions. Hopefully we'll have a few minutes at the end before we have to leave where I will be able to take a question or two. If not, a handout should be coming forth to you. Does anybody have the handout here that was just given? The handout, that's not the handout. If you want to contact me, there is my email address and phone number. I'll have that at the end of the present. That's it. So the handout is coming forth. And this is a copy of the slides. So you will have a copy of the presentation and also my contact information. Next, please note that I am not an attorney, a CFP, a CPA. I do some gift planning on behalf of Lutherans for Life, but anything that I share that you feel might be something that you'd like to incorporate in your giving or your estate plan, I do encourage you to consult your professional advisors. And I'm going to draw attention to one in particular, which would maybe have a little more application in this particular program, namely a CPA. Because some of the things I'll be talking about, I think before you complete or do, you will want to you probably would want to talk to your CPA before you conclude that. Okay, let's talk about some unusual gifts. There are two ways to make an unusual gift. In fact, there are two ways to make a gift, period, a charitable gift. One is as a current gift. One is as a current gift, and another is as an estate gift. So we're going to illustrate this first by talking about something that, if you're like me, you have a couple of these in your safety deposit box, namely a savings bond. Maybe you don't have them in your safety deposit box, but for those of you that do, or have some somewhere else, we're going to talk about making a gift of a U.S. savings bond. And we're going to use Mary as our example here. Mary is our example. And we're going to talk, first of all, about how to make a gift using a current savings bond. First of all, and by the way, Mary is really me, because the example I'm using I did personally a month or two ago. But let's use Mary as an example right now. In 1994, Mary purchased a $75 face value Series EE savings bond. She did it for $37.50. Now, I remember the good old days when there was actually more interest paid. It would take about 10 years, maybe less, for your bond to mature. Well, the bond matured on 2012, which according to my math is about 18 years. So it took that long for the bond to mature, reaching the full $75. However, Mary continued to hold it until last month, until September of this year, at which point Mary went to the bank and determined what the value of the bond was, which was $88.77, meaning it had earned $51.27. So she will owe ordinary income tax for the latter amount when she does her taxes for 2016 after January 1. Now, what does Mary do? Well, Mary donates the $88.77 to ministry. Mary donates the $88.77 to ministry. Now, she's going to owe ordinary income tax on the $51.27, but she's going to receive a tax deduction for the $88.77. Now, what could Mary have done with this bond other than donate it? Well, she could have held it until 2024, which would actually be, 30 years, at which point she would have interest, which would have accumulated to $150. More on that in a moment. Now, the other thing that Mary could have done, or do, since she's still living, is she could decide to leave that savings bond to ministry. So if you have savings bonds in your safety deposit box and you'd like to leave them to ministry, what you would want to do is make a notation of them in your will. You would like to indicate that it was a savings bond. It was issued in December of 1994. It has a face value of $75, and include the serial number of the savings bond. So in your living trust or in your will, you want to specify all of these things. And then, of course, you'd also in your will want to say who you're leaving it to. St. Paul Lutheran School, Lutherans for Life, Concordia Theological Seminary, for example. Now, Mary, in the future, as we all will be called home to heaven. In this case, if she passes at, say, the same year that it would quit earning interest in 2024, the $150 savings bond would go to ministry tax-free. So now she would not owe, the ministry would not owe ordinary income tax. They would receive the full $150. Now if she cashes it in before she passes away, she would owe ordinary income tax on it. Or for that matter, if she leaves the bond to her family, they will owe ordinary income tax on the savings bond. So really what this what this boils down to is very similar to if you leave monies in an IRA or a 401k plan or a 403b plan, where if you leave monies in any type of tax-deferred savings instrument, such as an IRA, you will not pay the income tax on your life, but your family will if you leave one of those things to them. Or if you leave monies in an IRA or a 401k to ministry, the ministry will get the full value and not pay any income tax on it. So a savings bond is the same way. So anyway, is a savings bond unusual? No. Is gifting a savings bond unusual? Well, yes, it is. Having talked to a couple of financial professionals, savings bonds are very common, but they're not as popular as they used to be for donating. But it might be something, particularly if you'd like to leave an estate gift to ministry, but you don't want to leave a percentage of your will and you don't want to do it through an IRA, if you have some savings bonds in your safety and deposit box, why don't you name them, or you can name them, and that will go to ministry. Next, grain. I have never handled a gift of grain. So what I'll share, I think is accurate. It's been discussed with entities in our church that have accepted gifts of grain, but it's not something I have handled personally. The benefit to donating grain to ministry, or probably any charitable institution, is that grain is, for all practical purposes, as liquid as cash. You can donate real estate and some other things, but then there's the sale of the real estate or a sale of a tangible item. I'll talk more about that in a moment. Whereas grain can easily be converted into cash. Now, why would someone donate grain? Well, the main reason it would be donated would be for the same reason that any gift is given, primarily, namely to benefit a loved ministry. That always is the first motivation, or should be. In my 40 years of stewardship and development work, I've only had one or two instances where I've had somebody call, say, "I don't care who you are and what you do, I'm looking for a tax deduction." And when I go through the particulars of what they want to give and what type of tax deduction they would receive, they normally say thank you very much and goodbye, and we never hear from them again. Because there has to, in most cases, all cases really, there has to be some charitable motivation. And because of tax reasons, that's certainly true in the case of donating grain. Now, there is no ordinary income tax. There is no charitable deduction when you donate grain. Why? Because you have raised the grain, and the expense that you incurred for that, you have already deducted as a business expense. Now, whether you would avoid ordinary income tax depends upon whether the grain actually can be sold at a net margin. I'm told this year grain prices are lousy. Is that true? I guess it depends on the grain, but maybe just grain of any kind is bad. So what was it that Will Rogers once said? You know, the great advantage over the Soviet Union is there's no income tax. However, in the Soviet Union, there's no income. So it's a little hard to avoid ordinary income tax if you're not wouldn't be making any money on the grain. But that's not to say that there wouldn't be benefits, and of course the main benefit would be benefiting ministry. Now, what are the steps in donating grain? Well, first of all, the donor delivers the grain to the elevator, and before that is done, the grain elevator is notified and understands and accepts that the grain is being donated in the name of, or for, or by such and such a charitable institution, by, say, Lutherans for Life, that it is a gift for XYZ Lutheran ministry and that it needs to be placed in their name. When the grain is donated, it is not placed in the name of the donor. It is not donated in the name of the donor. Secondly, or next, if there are going to be any expenses incurred related to the transfer or storage of grain or drying of grain, it is preferable, and of course it depends upon the ministry whether they might incur some of these costs, but for the most part, the donor assumes that they will pay for some of the cost of transferring, storing, and drying. Now, I would think, speaking for Lutherans for Life, that if we were so blessed to receive a gift of grain, we would try and sell it as soon as possible. But I suppose there are some ministries that know what they're doing. I don't. But if they're familiar with the grain market and they follow it and they think in a month the grain price might go up and they'd want to hold on to it and maybe incur the cost that related to that, that would be a possibility. But since it is a gift, preferably any expenses related to it would be covered by the donor. Next, of course, Since it is owned by XYZ Lutheran Ministry, the elevator, of course, should not sell it until they're directed to do so by the ministry. It's the ministry's gift, or it's the ministry's grain, and they shouldn't sell it until, of course, that they do that. Now, if you wanted to give grain to your congregation, or to a Lutheran school, or a ministry that didn't have staff available to handle the transaction, you might want to work through a third-party entity to complete what is called a pass-through gift of the grain. For example, the LCMS Foundation. The LCMS Foundation in St. Louis has accepted many gifts of grain, and in many cases they will do this on behalf of another ministry and pass the proceeds on to a ministry or ministries. So, for example, if you wanted to donate grain, and putting a little shameless plug in here for Lutherans for Life, if you wanted to donate grain and half go to, say, Lutherans for Life and half to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, you could set up a pass-through account with the Lutheran LCMS Foundation, and then they in turn would accept it and arrange for 50% of the proceeds of each to go to those two respective ministries. Now, there would be a fee here of some kind, probably a percentage, 1%, something like that. It shouldn't be too much. And I would, of course, before you do anything like that, you would want to arrange that with the LCMS Foundation. So what I'm saying, though, is if you want to give, you know, part of it to your congregation and, say, part of it to another ministry, I wouldn't be intimidated about the process, because it could be worked out through a third party who would handle the details and the proceeds with you. Okay, next. Certainly, Lutherans for Life and probably every Lutheran ministry and every charity has talked about the benefits of donating, or I should say directing, the death benefit from a life insurance policy to ministry. So in other words, either in some cases people will purchase a life insurance policy, and they will do so with the idea that they can leave an estate gift which would be considerably larger than if they just left some cash from their estate, because the premiums, of course, are going to purchase a life insurance policy, and then the policy is a greater amount. Or they could take a policy that they have, which maybe their own kids no longer need. Their kids are out, they're working, they're successful, and so and you don't need it anymore, the death benefit. So you could certainly direct that the death benefit go to ministry. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where you're taking the actual contract and signing it over to a ministry, or you're signing over the income that is generated from that life insurance policy to ministry. And speaking of that, there are two approaches. The first would be, and this would be a relatively, unless you have a $1 million policy, this would be a rather smaller size gift. But let's say you have a whole life insurance policy and it is paying dividends to ministry, or is paying you dividends, I'm sorry, right now it's paying you dividends. You could say, or could direct, that instead the life insurance company direct those dividends to the ministry of your choice right now. Now, in my case, my policy, I'm worth more dead than alive, but I'm not worth that much. I think one of my life insurance policies pays $23 in dividends a year, so that isn't all that much. But I certainly could direct that go to ministry, and you can too. And of course, you would receive an ordinary income tax deduction for whatever the amount of that dividend is. The other way is that you can donate the policy, sign it over to ministry, and that you will have no more rights to the policy. In other words, you're no longer eligible for the death benefit. You no longer have access to the cash value. It's gone. It's gifted. And you have received or will be receiving a receipt for that. Now, the policy would need to be appraised, or the cash value would need to be determined so that the amount of your deduction could be determined. If it's going to be over $5,000, and this is true of gifts of tangible personal property, you're probably going to need some type of formal appraisal. But this is where I'm advising you, before you make some of these gifts, you would want to talk to your CPA, because you would want to determine just exactly what, if your cash value you think is $1,329, you'd want to confirm that that would be the cash value, and of course the amount that you would be taking as the ordinary income tax. I would try and determine that ahead of time before you actually go ahead and make the gift. I would actually consult. Now, if you have to have an appraisal done by a professional, it might run, you know, again, to be a $250 charge or something. But of course, if you're giving a policy that has a cash value of maybe several thousand dollars or more, then again, it would certainly be worth it from that standpoint. Precious metals. Anybody here seen William Devane on TV? You know, the economy's going to collapse. Buy gold. Not a bad idea. But maybe if you're like me, you have a little bit of that, and it's been sitting in your safety deposit box, in my case, for almost 40 years. And again, maybe you feel that this might be something that you could donate to benefit ministry now, which I remember the first book I read about how everything was going to fall apart and money was going to be worthless and we're going to have to take our guns and groceries and gold and head for the hills was, I think it was entitled, The Crash of 1982. So I'm still waiting for that. But I'm not belittling that. I mean, this country has some real problems, and I understand where people are coming from. Now, if you donate precious metals, you are donating what would generally be considered a gift of tangible personal property, which means I'm not sure how on the screen this ended up being a little disjointed, because it wasn't on my screen, etc. But anyway, your charitable deduction is pretty much limited to the cost basis of what you paid for the precious metal. And that is true whether it is coin or whether it is bar. So whether it's silver or gold bars or silver or gold coins, it's pretty much limited to what you paid for it. So when I was 25 years old, my grandmother died at 86, and I inherited $1,200. At that time, it was an era of high inflation, and of course, we wondered what would happen with the economy. And I thought, rather than stick it in a savings account where I might be tempted to spend it, I bought 3 Krugerrands at that time that were valued at about $400 each. Now they're worth about $1,500. And they, as I said, they, in my case, they're still in that safety deposit box almost 40 years after I purchased them. Now, if I donated one or more of those Krugerrands, are they worth what I paid for them, or are they worth what they're worth? The answer is, they're pretty much worth what you paid for them, except there have been some private letter rulings or requests for private letter rulings that in the case of certain types of coins, namely Krugerrands and Canadian Leafs, that instead they would be valued at what their fair market value is, and there's a gray area. So again, just like I would do with existing life insurance policy donation, I would contact the CPA if I had a precious metal which was in a coinage of a particular country and say, I just want to make sure, you know, I purchased this for $1,200, it's worth $1,500 now. If I donate this, am I going to get the $1,200, am I going to get the $1,500? So I would consult the CPA ahead of time. However, if you can see a little disjointed on the screen, one thing the donor would avoid, or you as the donor of a precious metal would avoid, is you may not be able to deduct the full fair market value of giving a silver bar or a gold coin. You may only be able to deduct what you paid for it, but one thing that you will avoid is something called a 28% collectibles rate tax. So in other words, if you have a collectible and it has increased in value, in my case from $400 to $1,500, I could, if I went and cashed that in, I would owe 28% collectibles tax on that $1,100 increase in fair market value. So that is a tax benefit of donating a coin or precious metal which would fall under the collectibles situation. Okay, also, I don't think this would work very well. I think if you have sorghum or coin or wheat or rice or something, you can't really leave that in your will. But you certainly could leave a precious metal, just as you can leave a savings bond. You can also leave that in addition to donating it as a tangible gift now, you can also leave that in your will. So once again, in your will or your living trust, if you have precious metals, you can actually name them. So that when you pass, if the reason that you've accumulated them in the first place is because you're concerned about that God-awful day that we hope never comes, if you're called home to heaven and that hasn't happened, you can certainly designate it in your will or living trust to go. Last, let's talk about donations of other personal property. Now, I mentioned that precious metals could be considered probably under the tax code as personal property, but let's talk about other things. Now, how many folks here every year make sure you take enough old clothes to the Salvation Army to get a $500 deduction or to the Goodwill? If you're not too ashamed, raise your hand. I'm seeing some fingers raised and a hand. Well, I'm not too ashamed to say that. In fact, we consider that part of our gift to the Lord because we always give it to the Salvation Army, and it's, quite honestly, it's a no-brainer. By that, I mean that if you take $500 in old clothes or junk or books or anything to the Salvation Army or the Goodwill or St. Vincent de Paul Society or whoever, as long as you write down what you're donating and how you arrived at the value. Okay, my wife donated a pair of my socks. Only one of them had a hole in it. So that means that they're worth $1 instead of $2. If they had no holes, they'd be worth $2, for example. As long as you do that and write that down, you can take that deduction and nobody's ever going to challenge you on it. And so it might mean that depending upon the tax bracket you're in, that you're going to owe just a little less money to Obama because you're taking an extra $500 deduction if you itemize. I'm now going to be talking about personal property that for the most part would be at $501 to $5,000. So I'm going to talk about that threshold beyond the old clothes to the Salvation Army or the Goodwill. And of course, visually, I have some examples here. A musket, a dresser, etc. Two considerations. One, and I think these are the only two considerations that I would look at if I was looking to donate personal property to a ministry. Number one, can the ministry use the item? Can they use them? And that's why I have a van up there. Maybe they can use a van if they're a school or whatever. Now, I have something in my house that I have thought about donating for years and never have. I remember walking in an office one time and seeing a sign that said, "Indecision is a decision." By virtue of indecision, I have made a decision so far not to donate that item. What is it? It is a French horn brass that my folks purchased for me in 1963 that had a value of $325, which is a fair amount of money back in 1963. I played that all through grade school, junior high, high school, and right through to college in 1975. Now, when I was in high school, the band through the school district offered me the use of what is called a double horn. The horn that I owned had three valves, and the double horn had four, which made it was a little easier to get to certain notes. That horn in 1971 was worth $900. So I used that for 1 year in high school, and then I wasn't going to high school anymore. Somehow I managed to keep it over the summer until somebody showed up 1 week into my freshman year in college and confiscated it. I wasn't stealing it, I was just waiting for somebody to show up, and eventually they did. So I went back to playing my old horn at college. When I say, can the ministry use the item? From time to time I've had conversations with people at parochial schools, Lutheran schools, and I say, well, what do you do about band instruments? They say, well, some of the folks, you know, their parents buy them, but we have other kids that can't afford them, so we either rent them or have them on hand. So I have thought from time to time, again, indecision, that it would be great if I could donate that horn and have somebody make some use of it. By the way, I will never play it again. I won't go into details, but I have a pulmonary issue, so it's not like when I retire I can use it to play in a community band, and that's why I'm not donating it. So anyway, what would it be worth? Well, it would be worth more than $325. It'd probably be worth several hundred dollars, certainly more than $500 at this point. So could the school use that item? Probably. And so that would be one big consideration as to whether you would want to donate it. Secondly, if the ministry cannot use it, can they easily convert it to cash, and would you be comfortable with that? Example, about 10 years ago, at the camping ministry I worked for about 10 years, we had a lady down the street from the camp. She heard we were looking for auction items, and she brought over a 1950s circa single page copier. This is pre-Xerox. It didn't work. There was no toner. There were no sheets. But, quote, this lady said, I'm glad I can donate it to you, because if I gave it to the Salvation Army, they might throw it out. Well, the copier did not belong being used by the camp. It didn't belong in the auction. It didn't belong in a dumpster. It really belonged in the Smithsonian Institution. Now, where did that copier end up? The answer, I don't know. Not only that, but I don't want to know what happened to the copier. But obviously, this dear lady had such an attachment to this thing that she wanted to give it to the camp, but she just couldn't envision it being sold. So I would really say, if it's something they can't use, make sure that you're comfortable with the idea that they would turn it into cash. So that's a good example. Also, make sure, I would strongly suggest, if you donate it, and when I say easily convertible, comfortable in being easily converted into cash, obviously if it's an item that's going to be sold for $250, and maybe it's going to take a staff member 2 solid weeks of making phone calls to have that done, or to post online and ship and all of that, then you may want to think about that. Now, if an item donated is worse than worse, that's a Freudian slip, and I don't even believe in Freud. If the item is donated is worth less than $5,000, acknowledgement from the ministry stating the value is needed for a charitable deduction, and hopefully the ministry will be comfortable in providing that. There are many legal counsel for nonprofit organizations that will say, accept this gift in kind, but for God's sakes, don't give them a price on it. It does happen that way. I would again consult with your CPA and the nonprofit and the Lutheran ministry to make sure you have come up with a mechanism that will help determine the value. For example, I haven't done this, so I don't know, but how would you evaluate my French horn? Well, one of the things that might be done would be to go online and see if you could find a Holton brass French horn, circa 1963, single, and see if you could find any online, and what are they being sold for, assuming they're in good condition. And that might be the justification for the amount that either you would deduct, or that the charity would say, you know, a comparable instrument is been seen to be worth X, you know, $729.39. So that would be one way to do that, to determine that. If the item is worth more than $5,000, a written appraisal should be done and a form 8283 completed. Now, I asked my own CPA, is this on tape, by the way? Well, I hope, anybody here willing to do bail money for me some future date? I read a book in the early 1980s by a former IRS agent who said, if you want to flag yourself for an audit, just try and deduct some personal property that you've given to somebody that's worth more than $500. And so I emailed my CPA in Waco, Texas, that's been our CPA for over 30 years, and I asked, I said, is this a red flag if you donate something between $500 and $5,000? And he said no, and not only did he say no, he put it in writing. So I think I'll go to him for bail money, but anyway. But generally with tangible personal property, and this not only includes a van or a French horn or whatever, but certainly precious metals, for example, or anything. If you get above the $5,000 mark, you'd be talking about completing this form. Also, Once again, whether you're talking about precious metals or whatever, you could also leave one of those items of personal property in your will. So if you've collected band instruments and you want to leave them to the local Lutheran high school, you could certainly do that through your will or living trust also. Now, one more thing to consider, and I mentioned this earlier. First and foremost, and I know, and I mean this sincerely, I know there's nobody in this room that this doesn't apply to. What I said earlier, that why would you ever consider doing any of these things? Why do you consider donating cash to ministry? Well, it is to benefit ministry. That is certainly your motivation first and foremost. So with that, certainly whether you're talking about a gift of precious metals, life insurance, tangible personal property, savings bonds, or whatever, certainly we encourage, just the same way as we would if you want to leave 5% of your estate to ministry, certainly first and more, seek the guidance and blessings of the Lord, you know, consult the scriptures, and do what you wish accordingly. Now, in the handout I have, if you're interested in doing leaving a gift of something like that to Lutherans for Life, I have my contact information, and for that matter, any type of an estate gift. Also, if you would like to leave something to us, but as most people do, that is that they will designate that in their will or their estate plan or their trust, but they will not notify the ministry ahead of time. This is the information you need. This is our address and our employee identification number, our IRS number. So you need our name, address, and that EIN number. And I don't need to necessarily know about this. You're certainly welcome to share that with us. For those who do leave something to us in their estate plan and they want to let us know ahead of time, you don't have to, but you certainly could become part of our Life Legacy Society, which we also have. So I have about 5 minutes for questions. Yes, Bob?
Yeah, regarding life insurance policies, it's fairly simple. Step one is that you make sure that the ownership of the policy is transferred to the charity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
712 was issued by the insurance company. It basically shows what's called the interpolated terminal reserve value, which is not quite the same as the cash value.
Okay.
And so you get that 712 and you can file that with your tax return management judge.
Okay.
Now, having said that, if the person who donates a life insurance policy has a shorter than normal life expectancy,
mm-hmm.
then you'd want to get it appraised.
Okay. Okay.
We have a life expectancy of 20 years normally because of some illness. We have a life expectancy of 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the policy is worth more.
Okay.
Then you need an appraisal.
Okay.
Very few people that can appraise life insurance policies, but there are certain companies that do that for you.
Okay.
Kind of an argument itself.
Very good. Bob is our attorney on our development committee for Lutherans for Life, and he has just offered an excellent addendum, which would provide even, if followed, as I understand, would probably allow a person to donate an existing policy to even have more tax benefits than just the simple overview that I gave. So I assume, Bob, that gosh, should I take somebody's name in vain here, Thrivent? I would imagine that many insurance companies would be familiar with that.
Yeah, many insurance companies familiar with Form 712.
Okay.
Because when someone dies and you file the estate tax return, you're required by the IRS to file Form 712.
Okay. I'm just writing this down because I may do an article on this topic unusual gifts for life date next year. Also, would your CPA be familiar with that, do you think, or less likely? Okay. Okay, so if you want to donate insurance, I would, of course, you would need to be going through your life insurance company or your company, but anyway, you might want to just write down on a piece of paper Form 712, and that should help as a reference. Other questions here? We still have about 5 minutes. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes. If you donate a house or you donate any cash while you're living, anything, is 5 years the accurate time period? Used to be what? Two? Three. When, so really the government is giving themselves a greater edge now than they used to. So the answer to the question was, if you donate the cash value of a life insurance policy and have to go into a nursing home, could the government come to the ministry and claim the cash value as something that should have gone towards your care? The answer is yes, because under, if it's 5 years or less, they can do that, but they can also do that if you were to donate a cash gift to, if you cut a $10,000 check for a new building at a church today, and 4.5 years from now you go into, boy, I'm not sure I want to ask this question because I'm not sure I'm prepared for the answer, but if you donate a $10,000 gift for some bricks and mortar at a new sanctuary, can they still come in 4.5 years?
It's a question of fact at that time. Normally, you think you'll find a look back period to make the gifts to your family.
Right, okay.
When you talk about a larger gift to a charity, that's kind of a factual situation. If you make it in the context of a life insurance policy, let's say you only have natural gas, and you give away to a charitable organization that's got a big cash value, within 5 years to go through the nursing home, I think an argument can be made that by the government that was done for one thing.
Okay.
So it's a tougher role for the government to cover, to win, if it's a gift to a charity. In the vast majority of cases, what they're looking at though is giving to family members and then making yourself eligible for assistance.
Okay. Okay, so if you give money to a campaign for your Lutheran school, bricks and mortar, you're probably okay. If a gift of a life insurance policy, if it's your only asset, and it was deemed by the IRS that the reason you did that was you didn't want that cash value to go pay the nursing home, then the government would have a claim. I think we have time for one more question, if there are any. If not, I will assume I have done such a magnificent job that, and also thanks to our resident attorney, any follow-up questions have been answered. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And again, thank you too for your interest in Lutherans for Life.